Weekdays from 4.
105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Seeing you home.
Cambridge 105.
Quickly going to mention a tweet which we've had from one Emily Shalom. She says, have you been on Cambridge Rant at 105? I recognise your voice. Yes, yes, I have, love. I think it seems to be a conversation in the Shalom household who's one has just realised that the other one has been into us. And, yeah, featured on Susie's programme yesterday. And we grabbed a clip in for the news this afternoon.
The Gadget Guide.
Lawrence is inexplicably at a Christmas party. I don't know if he's early or late for that, but Rob Chipperfield is here.
Late, apparently. Good evening, Julian. Welcome along to Gadget Guide number 102. First one, of course, for 2017. And the big news in the tech industry this week is the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. This is going or has gone on over in the States. And it's basically where all of the big home gadget companies launch all of their new toys. We'll be coming to that in just a few moments' time. But first of a bit of general tech news. The first one, Google, you might recall, I think it's a year or two ago, had big plans to launch internet drones. So the concept behind this was that where you've got areas more relevant out in the US where everyone's a lot more spread out and maybe some other countries, but where you can't get internet by running cables or it's too expensive to run cables, what you do is you fly up some drones up into the sky and then effectively use them as well as hotspots. So by putting them, you know, 1,000 foot up, it means that they can have a much better view down to everyone
there. How do you keep the drone up there?
Well, this was a problem. So I think they were planning to effectively have a rotating fleet of them. So you sort of send one up and it goes up there for an hour or whatever it is, and then that another one takes off and the first one comes back down to recharge. And so you sort of have this self-organising mesh of flying objects.
I remember a radio station once tried to use a weather balloon as an aerial system and ended up around a traffic bollard in Colchester.
Yes, and there have been other initiatives using hot air balloons. I think that's where they're sort of focusing their energies now, the Project Loon, apparently, which seems to be some kind of slightly futuristic... I don't think hot air balloons, but probably helium balloons or something along those lines. Google, of course... not actually the company that owns all of this. It's actually Alphabet is their parent company.
But that's
company.
The parent company. Although the parent company used to be Google, didn't it?
Yeah, and so this is actually a statement from X. Presumably they have one division for each letter of the alphabet or something along those lines. And so X bought Titan. And they've decided anyway that they're not going to do internet drones. So other means of getting your broadband to you will become necessary, obviously. Coming back home... This is an interesting one. It's been going on for a long time, and it's been controversial as well. This is that the big internet service providers, so Sky, BT, Virgin Media in particular, and probably some of the other ones owned by those companies, so Plusnet's owned by BT, for example, are going to start sending out effectively copyright infringement emails on behalf of the rights holders. And this is going to happen in the next few days.
This has been bubbling for a while, hasn't it?
It has. Basically, the deal is that the record companies and the film studios and the like want to be able to give people a nudge to say, hey, look, we've detected that you're doing this. This is normally using the sort of the peer-to-peer file sharing services. We've detected that you're doing this, and we'd like to encourage you not to. Now, there's obviously going to be some people who will always do it regardless. And there's probably a whole load more people who genuinely don't realise that they're doing
something
wrong.
They're going after soft targets. But they're probably thinking, I'm paying £40 a month for my high-speed internet connection.
Exactly.
Why do I need to pay any more?
Exactly. So this is being very much targeted as educational letters. And it's been very hard to sort out because the ISPs are obviously responsible for the privacy of their customers' data. And they don't have a right to hand that over to the copyright holders. At the same time, the ISPs don't particularly want to get involved in it themselves because then they're opening themselves up to a lot of further avenues of, well, if you're doing it for those copyright holders, then actually you can start looking for all of these sorts
of infringements. Well, I was going to say, because, you know, it's the it's quite often that the music producers and obviously the film companies
will misidentify.
As well, But you've also got photography companies.
Yes.
You know, there's agencies like Getty, for example, having been in receipt of a copyright infringement from Getty over, actually turned out to be a photograph that a press office had given me.
Yes.
But, you know, Getty are quite hot, and so are other photo companies. I don't want to particularly single poor old Getty out on this. It's a tricky one.
It really is, and this is something that's been happening on some of the content hosting sites. So, for example, YouTube, if you put a video up on YouTube, they will run some software that will try to detect automatically if you've used music that you don't have the rights to.
Ironically, of course, that started because broadcasters were getting a bit ratty with YouTube, but they were letting them do it.
Exactly. So they will do that, but there are a lot of false positives as well. So, for example, you have people putting up content that they do own, and the rights holders will complain about it because they've got some automatic software, and YouTube will take it down because of this automatic complaint, and then the user goes, well, no, that wasn't me. And it sort of bounces back and forth. So anyway, this so far is just, quotes, educational letters. So this isn't prosecutions. The rights holders aren't getting the personal details. Basically, they say, okay, this internet connection, we don't know who it is, but this internet connection's been doing something bad. And then the ISP then takes the responsibility to take that onto the user and send them this letter. And hopefully, they will then do the honest thing of you know, paying for the music legitimately. As with TV licensing letters, it's a little bit, yeah, the language used is meant to sound a bit scary. It's obviously been designed to sound scary without actually necessarily having very much body towards it. So it's the threats of court action and the threats of fines.
I feel it's completely wrong to pirate the stuff, but I'm not entirely convinced. I like what they're doing.
I know, and so it will be very interesting to see how this plays out. There are some ISPs who are vehemently against being involved in this in the slightest. One of the ones that famously so is a small ISP, Andrews and Arnold, who vigorously defend any attempt to share any of this data. As far as they're concerned, they're there to provide an internet service, not to effectively spy on people. So it'll be really interesting to see how that pans out. One final bit of news, and this is in the security side of things. WhatsApp, they added encryption to their messages going back last year, was it? Or the year before. End-to-end encryption. And that's the idea that if I was to send you a message on WhatsApp, nobody, not even WhatsApp, could read that message apart from you and from me, which is fine. But the problem is that if you were to now change your phone to a new phone and I was to send you a message, then how does your new phone understand that? Because it was your old phone that had the key to that lock to be able to decrypt it. And so they've come up with this system where actually they can realize when people have changed phones and decrypt the messages and re-encrypt them for your new device, and then you get your messages, and that's all good. But of course, from a privacy point of view, this now means that if a government agency, if an attacker wanted to decrypt those messages, that facility now exists in the software. And it's a very, very difficult one to play, because you're trading off sort of how useful is the system, how easy to use is it, how reliable is it, against the expectations of privacy and security.
Mm. WhatsApp says it's fine, though, don't they, I think?
They do.
They say it's not a problem.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they would.
Exactly. And it's very much a trade-off, and it's possibly a valid trade-off. It's possibly the right one to make, because otherwise, how do you deal with, certainly in some areas, people switch SIM cards a lot, they switch phones a lot. It's the same thing of, I changed my phone a while back and I couldn't log into internet banking anymore.
So don't set me off about internet banking.
Where do you draw the line between what is safe enough for users versus what is easy enough for users to use? And it's a struggle that any security company has, and I don't think it's the last we'll hear of that sort of thing.
No, I think it's probably more to come on that. Well, thank you for now, Rob. We'll come back on the other side of the travel and talk about CES.
Good evening and welcome back to the Gadget Guide. And we're talking the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, which has been happening over the last couple of weeks over in the States. And this is where you get all of the new, frankly, cool consumer-oriented gadgets. This is much more sort of home market rather than businesses or what have you. And this year has been no exception. All of the big names have been there. Apple tend to not give it too much for
they do their own thing, yeah. Really, don't they?
Yeah, normally about a week later or something, so that everyone's got time to forget CES and then come and talk Apple. But all of the big names that you might expect are there. Nintendo launching their new console, the Nintendo Switch. This is a sort of hybrid, changeable, I guess, as the name suggests. So if you remember the Wii U. Their current console, it's sort of the main console which sits under your TV, and then you've got the gamepad, which is effectively, it's a cross between a controller and a portable thing. So if you remember the original Game Boys and the like, that was something you could take out with you and play with its own self-contained screen, battery, controllers, everything like that. Never really quite lived up to that expectation. It was a little bit clunky. The portable bit was a little bit half-baked, not very powerful. The Switch is a similar concept, but they've flipped it around a bit. So whereas with the Wii U, all of the cleverness was in the box that sat under your TV and you got a little bit of something to take with you. With the Switch, all of the compute power, all of the processing power is in the handheld bit, or the bit you can take, and the bit that sits under the TV is just the bit that powers the TV. And that suddenly means that you've got something very capable as a portable device. Obviously, they're feeling the pinch with competition from people who have tablet PCs, iPads, Android tablets and the like, and they've developed something that's a tablet oriented very much towards gaming. But at the same time, you've got the facility to very easily put it on the TV. That then means that when you're doing multiplayer games, you can all take a bit of processing power, or you can all take the bit of the control gear. So actually, it could be very interesting. Drawing some criticism, though, £280. This makes it Nintendo's most expensive console that they've ever launched.
And how different is that in price from the previous one?
I'm trying to remember what the Wii U goes for. I think it's quite a lot less. I think it's £240 at the moment by the looks of things. So not too much more necessarily, although that is the bundle with Mario Kart 8 and a few other bits and pieces. So I don't know. Traditionally, the console manufacturers have always priced their consoles quite cheaply and then made the money on the games. And that's been true for as long as I can remember, even going back to the likes of the Sega Mega Drive. Yeah, that was about the £100 mark, and then the games were £40 on top of that. Maybe with the move to the online game stores, that's changing. Something that Nintendo have maybe not quite got down as well as the likes of Valve with Steam and so on. They do have a new online service coming with the Switch. That, again, seems to be a little bit fuzzy at the moment. Talks of being able to play one of the classic NES games a month, whereas with the likes of Valve, you sort of buy as many as you want, and often they go either for
free
or very
cheap. And are they the
latest
games? Because this can be the issue with this.
This is the classic ones as well. So, again, drawing some criticism, the share price did drop of Nintendo, but there's some really interesting technology there. So I think when it actually goes live, it could be one to watch. Clearly, like I say, going after the tablet market as well. What else have we got? Oh, this is quite nice. We've talked a lot about the Alexa, the Amazon Echo devices, the Google Home devices, Siri, of course, these sort of voice-activated digital assistants. There's a company called Seven Hugs, and this is a Kickstarter project. I think Lawrence has actually backed it. And it's a smart...
Have we got that as a recommendation or not?
Yes. The Seven Hugs smart remote. And the idea is it gets rid of the classic thing. If your coffee table at home has about 10 remote controls for the TV, the DVD player, and who knows what else, and probably your light switches now. And this is one touchscreen color screen remote. So rather than having actual buttons, it's got a full screen, but it looks like a remote control. And it comes in reasonably cheaply.
But how different is that either for to one of these multi-remotes that you can buy, or indeed an app which runs on your phone or tablet?
So the multi-remotes quite a bit. So it's not just your classic infrared things of the TV and the Blu-ray player. It's your lights, it's your speakers, it talks to your Nest thermostat if you've got that, maybe cameras if you've got those, blinds, door locks, sockets, and integrates with services like Uber. And if this, then that. So it's taking it beyond just the hardware in your home. It talks to your Apple TV, for example, if you've got one of those. So it's trying to bring together that. People that want the likes of the Alexa, but perhaps want something tactile rather than voice-based.
As an aside, I noticed that in the States there was an announcement with a big satellite provider there, DirecTV, that integrating with Alexa. And yes, the technology that they use, DirecTV, not that far away from the technology in the Skybox.
Exactly,
you never know.
SkyQ. So I think it's trying to do what the Alexa and the like have done, but for people who prefer picking up a device, who prefer maybe something not listening to them all the time.
Sometimes it's easier, I think.
It is.
That's what I find as a user of Alexa. It is sometimes just simpler to pick up something, which is the problem, and one of the reasons why Alexa is good, is if you have to go 5 bits into the menu in order just to make your light brighter. That's not useful.
Yes, and they do seem to have done a good job with this. So the ability to customise menus. So your TV menu, perhaps, only has the volume control. Because you know what? Actually, your TV is always connected to your Skybox or your Apple TV or your Fire TV. All you need is the volume. Mm. So get rid of all the other buttons rather than trying to have everything on the screen at once. So that's very interesting. Of course, also solves the problem of how do you use Alexa when you're hoovering. And there's a lot of background noise.
She seems to pick up her name remarkably easy. She's probably flashing away at home even as we speak.
Exactly. Another one that I did like, this is Project Ariana. From the company Razer. If you're into your PC gaming, you've probably heard of Razer. They do some very nice keyboards, some very nice mice, that sort of thing. And the idea of it is that if you've got your TV or your computer monitor, you combine that with a high-resolution projector so that you have the bit that you're really looking at on the TV nice and bright, nice and high resolution, and then you use the projector to flood the rest of the room with the ambience. So if you're doing a first-person shooter game, for example, you've got the bit that you're really concentrating on the TV, but then you've got all the rest of your environment filling the rest of the room. And as you move around, the room changes, the lighting changes. So if you walk into a room that's dimly lit, then the room dimly lights up more dimly, and so on. It just gives you the context of the environment beyond the realm of just the TV. And it's not practical to fill your entire 360-degree living room at the resolution of your main TV, but you can do that with a projector. Microsoft pioneered this a little while back with a technology called IllumiRoom. That was a concept. They never actually got there as far as launching it. Razer are actually going there, and they're hoping to have it launched by the end of the year, so that could be really, really interesting.
I got a demo from a French company about 6 months ago, and they devised something, a set-top box manufacturer, name of NetGem. They devised this thing whereby your lights around your room changed according to what was on the screen at the time.
Yes, and Panasonic have done this with their TVs. What's it called? Mood lighting, I think they called it, where the TV screen, if you have it mounted on your wall, it's got a couple of multicolour light bulbs that point backwards. So the idea is it gets the average colour of your TV picture and then projects that onto the wall just as a single flood, so that if your TV is mostly showing a forest scene, then your wall goes a little bit green, and if it's showing a nice blue sky coastal resort, then your wall goes a bit blue. And it's taking that concept of just expanding out that context and taking it to a whole room. Could be really interesting to watch for the virtual reality and the gaming side of things.
Yeah, very much so.
Lots more CES, and we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks' time.